So over the last 4 weeks, we've waded through, like I mentioned last week, the introduction to the book of Proverbs, those 10 chapters or the 9 chapters that really start us off in that process. And we've considered many lessons from the Father to the Son as he's beginning this book. We've looked at a number of times through that how the embodiment of wisdom for us is something that we see and that we find in the person and the work of Jesus Christ. And now, as we explore the next section of the book, which is 19 chapters, the actual proverbial statements in Proverbs, there are just a few things that I want to say. This next section contains hundreds and hundreds of proverbs that cover basically any area or sphere of life that we can imagine. And we're going to look at that in about 6 weeks. There are going to be a lot of proverbs that we don't read from the book in the messages on Sunday morning. And I would encourage you to take some time to read through the book of Proverbs, to read through chapters 10 through 19 to see what's being written about there in these Proverbs of Solomon. What we are going to do is to look at the book of Proverbs thematically. So while there are all of these different areas of life and spheres of life that are covered, there are some things that Solomon comes back to over and over and over again when he's writing about what it looks like to live with wisdom. So over the next few weeks, we're going to kind of take a thematic approach where we're going to look at several of the different main themes we see in Proverbs. And the next thing is sort of a frame of reference for us as we do this. And this is something that comes from Bible teacher and scholar Tim Mackey. And he points out 3 important truths about the Proverbs, kind of primers before you read through the proverbial statements. The first is this, that the Proverbs are about probability. So generally speaking, if you live in wisdom and the fear of the Lord, then things in life will probably be great. If you live in wisdom and the fear of the Lord, then things in life are probably going to go well for you. And if you don't live in wisdom or the fear of the Lord, then things are probably not going to go well for you. And as a quick pause, Brian and Lorena, I think that might be last week's PowerPoint up right now. So that first blank on the page that's probably too small for the word is probability. So that's what you want to put in there. So the Proverbs are all about the probability of things going well or going poorly. If you live in accordance with what they say, the probability is that your life is going to go well. The second thing is this, that the Proverbs are not guaranteed formulas for success. So if you follow all of the Proverbs perfectly, if you kind of made a list, you know, where you said, hey, these are all of the do's that we see in the Proverbs. These are all of the don'ts that we don't see or do see in the Proverbs. These are all the things we should and should not do. Even if you followed all of the do's and don'ts perfectly, it's not a guaranteed formula for success. For example, one of the Proverbs in chapter 10 says this, the fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. There are all kinds of tangible lifestyle reasons why this is the case. Why if you followed everything that the Proverbs told you to do, you would live a long life. Just practical health reasons, relational health that comes up. Just living without recklessness that comes in that could prolong your life. There are all of those things that come into play with the Proverbs. But from observable reality, what we know and have experienced is that sometimes people that love and fear the Lord, people that live wisely, people that live in the ways that he instructs us to live, have short lives. You know, that terrible accidents happen in life, that things happen with people's health and that can't be corrected and cured. Even people that love the Lord and that live wisely and that fear the Lord, you know, and follow him faithfully, that there isn't a promise that's associated there. We see the same. And we often see this even in the words of David, you know, where he asks so often, why is it that the wicked are prospering and I'm struggling here? We know that sometimes wicked people live longer than wise people. That sometimes wicked people seem to have all of the advantages and happiness in life that wise people or people who are faithful to the Lord don't have. We see that kind of play out there. So there isn't this promise that if you would follow all of the Proverbs, things would go well. Which leads to the final point. That the Proverbs are focused on the general rule and not the exception. There are wisdom writings that cover the exceptions. You know, if you read through the book of Job, certainly that is a book about the exceptions. Job, as a man who feared the Lord, who did seek to live faithfully, who sought to do everything right, still found himself in this place of great struggling. He found himself in the exceptions. So the Proverbs, what we see are that general rule of what it looks like to live wisely or to live foolishly, and the outcomes of life when we choose the wise or the foolish life. And this morning, as we consider the first couple chapters of these wisdom sayings, we're going to focus in on the theme of what it looks like for us to communicate wisely, what it looks like for us to speak wisely. And there are all kinds of studies in life that help to give us perspective. You know, when we see a study that shows us what the percentage of our lives that we'll spend at work is, you know, and we see that, you know, typically when you're reading an article that has something that includes a piece like that, what it's trying to do is give you a perspective that either says something like, hey, work is an important part of your life, so find something that you enjoy doing, or hey, work is an important part of your life, but you need to make sure you're making margin for family or for other things. You know, articles like that are always giving us perspective when it's how much we work, how much we eat in life, how much we sleep, you know, all of those sorts of things. When we come to how much we speak or how much we communicate in life, it's really difficult to even land on a number, because the percentage of our lives that we spend in some form of communication is just astronomical. It's enormous. There was a recent study that I did find, and this was a business study by a communications firm, so there's maybe a little bit of bias in there. It was by a communications firm, and what it was saying was that that executives of corporations or upper-level management and supervisors in corporations, that they spend approximately 80% of their day communicating. That rather than like figuring something out or doing something, that the vast majority of their job is spent communicating with other people. And that's easy to imagine. You know, for any of us who work in an office or who have worked in an office, you know, oftentimes, when you come into work, if you could even wait long enough to get into work, the first thing you do is sit down and open your computer and check your email, which is communication. You're receiving communication in that moment. And then probably you respond to a couple of the urgent email messages that come up. Maybe you set up meetings to discuss some of the other things that will include communication. You listen to phone messages or you take phone calls. And so you kind of go through this process of beginning your day. And then at some point in your day, probably that gets interrupted by some sort of a departmental meeting or a shift meeting or some kind of interaction with the other people that you're there working with. So much of it is communication. And if you don't work in an office, it's the same. You know, if you work in a shop, you're communicating with your supervisor or the other people that you're working with. If you work in retail, you're communicating with customers all day long. If you work in teaching and in that profession, then you're either communicating or preparing to communicate for almost your entire day. You know, so much of the work that we do, even if it's not something that we think of as work in communications, involves this act of communicating. And so, while this is hard to calculate, studies would indicate that, similar to CEOs at work, that for average people, we spend 70 or 80% of our waking lives in communication with others. And that can be, you know, anything from reading a post that you're tagged in Facebook to sitting down with a friend to have a heart-to-heart conversation. That this idea of being connected with other people in communication is something that's almost a constant for us as humans. And so the point of all that is just to say that it makes sense that one of the very first themes that we see in the proverbial statements of Solomon is instructing us on how to communicate in wisdom, because this is one of the most important areas of our life. This is one of the things that we do most in life. And of course, when we look at the Bible, there's much that's been written about the way we speak or the way we communicate, about things that we should say or shouldn't say, about the kind of things that should be involved in our speech or not involved in our speech. This is something that we see in the laws of the Old Testament. You know, when we think of even the Ten Commandments, and two of them are talking about the way that we speak, about not taking the Lord's name in vain and not bearing false witness against our neighbor. There's this idea that right there in the law of God, there are instructions, and there are many of them, that figure in to speak to us about how we should be communicating with other people. This is something that figures prominently in the New Testament, where over and over again, Paul and others write about the kind of language that we use and guard against, kind of whether it's dishonest language or profane language or language that's abusive towards other people. You know, there are all of these warnings about the way that we speak. And so this is something that we see prominently in the book of Proverbs. And to look at Proverbs chapter 10, verses 11 to 14, it says this: "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning, but a rod is for the back of one who has no sense. The wise store up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool invites ruin." So to break this down a little bit, to kind of see it as a chart, we see a couple things about wise communication and foolish communication in that passage. So with wise communication, we see this, that it spreads life. The way it talks about it there in verse 11 is that the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. It's something that is spreading life to others. Wise communication covers over wrong through love. It has this way of diffusing a situation with care. And then it seems redundant to say wise communication demonstrates wisdom. But that's what he's talking about here in verse 13 when he says wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning. What he's saying is not just this general idea of being wise, but that whenever you're speaking with wisdom, or whenever you're listening to someone who is speaking with wisdom, that there's something there that you know is of substance when they're talking. That you get this sense from them. And the same, that it's knowledgeable. And we know what it's like to take advice from people that are knowledgeable or people that are not knowledgeable. You know, sometimes you get the sense when you're talking with someone and they're giving you advice about something, you kind of get this sort of inkling like, I don't know if that's right, and I don't know if you know that that's not right, what you're saying to me. But you just get this sense sometimes when you talk with people where you say, man, they really knew what they were talking about in that moment. Or man, they really didn't know what they were talking about. And we see that in the inverse, in foolish communication. So it conceals violence. And that idea of concealing will come up a few times. There's something in foolish communication that is not forthright or honest or open. It stirs up conflict. Rather than covering over wrong in love, it irritates situations. Foolish words lead to punishment and invite ruin. When we follow things that aren't wise or aren't knowledgeable, it leads us into those kinds of places. So we see that chunk in chapter 10. And then going on just a little bit further, beginning in verse 18, we see, whoever conceals hatred with lying lips and spreads slander is a fool. Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of sense. In using that same kind of chart, we see the same sort of thing laid out. In wise communication, it's prudent. It exercises discretion. It doesn't always need to be heard. It's valued as choice silver. It has this high value to others when we speak wisely. It provides nourishment to others. And inversely, foolish communication, and this describes it, is lying and slanderous. It goes back to this idea that it's dishonest. A heart of little value. And I think that is a pretty strong indictment over foolish speech. Because it doesn't say words of little value. It says that when we communicate foolishly, that it reflects a heart of little value. And then it says that foolish communication brings death for a lack of sense. It's this clear dichotomy laying out again in Proverbs. And as chapter 10 is drawing to a close, it says, from the mouth of the righteous comes the fruit of wisdom, but a perverse tongue will be silenced. The lips of the righteous know what finds favor, but the mouth of the wicked only what is perverse. So one of the first main themes that we see in the actual Proverbs, in the book of Proverbs, is the importance of wise communication. And like I said, we see that dichotomy laid out again, that the way of wisdom, that wise communication is something that brings life, and that foolish communication is something that brings death. And one of the things I want to point out as we're considering, and as we keep talking about this idea of life and death, is that this is something that isn't just speaking about sort of an afterlife or a spiritual life and death, that the words that Solomon is sharing are meant to be intensely practical to life here and now. You know, as we think about this, as a child, were you ever punished for saying something foolish? I certainly was. You know, and that's what it says there in Proverbs chapter 10, that foolish words invite punishment. You know, have you ever seen the way that siblings have this ability to stir up conflict with foolish words? I was a middle child with sort of a knack for instigation, and I could tell story after story about times that my words were involved in instigating conflict, like Solomon talks about here. Have you ever had that moment in life where you blurted something out, and immediately what you wished was that you practiced prudence and had kept your mouth shut in a situation? You know, I think these are things that we've all seen or observed and likely have been a part of, but that we understand when we think about foolish communication. And inversely to that, we've seen how someone who can exercise discretion in the midst of a difficult situation or an argument can help diffuse a situation, can help cover something over. We've seen how people that choose to forgive others in love are acting wisely and bring wisdom to situations. We have seen how people just have this ability in life that we go to as sources of wisdom when we're in a state of confusion, because we know that we trust that person's words carry with them a sense of knowledge and wisdom, that there's someone who we can rely on what they're saying to us. You know, we've seen in our lives over and over again the way that foolish communication and wise communication play out. The words of Proverbs are practical because they're not just talking about something that's far away and in the future, not just sort of ramifications. Hey, if you live foolishly now, death, eternal death is awaiting you. Or if you live wisely or righteously now, eternal life is awaiting you. It's saying right now, there are ways that our lives are made substantively better or worse by the way that we communicate with other people. So speaking with wisdom is something that is righteous in the eyes of God, which is, of course, of the utmost and highest importance, and is also something that helps us to just experience a better life. Life as we were created to experience it here and now. And so in chapter 10, we see how speaking with wisdom is important for those two reasons I just said. The first is that it is pleasing to God when we communicate in wisdom. And this isn't just with our words. Again, this is the way we communicate online, the way we communicate via email, the way we communicate via the written word, the way we speak with other people. It is pleasing to God when we communicate in wisdom. And this is something that that several times in those passages, especially in verses 31 and 32, it talks about how this is the way that the righteous speak. And so we know that righteousness is the way of living right in the eyes of God. And then the second thing is that it improves our lives. That practical element. Speaking honestly with another person is not always the easiest thing to do in a moment, but it will make our lives better. It may be harder in that second, but it is something that honors another person. It's something that is a righteous way of speaking, and it's something that makes our lives better. Being prudent and choosing not to respond to everything you disagree with will make your life better. I'll say that one more time for everyone with a Facebook account. Being prudent and choosing not to respond to everything you disagree with will make your life better. I promise that that's the case. Choosing to use words of love instead of words that stir up conflict will make your life better. Choosing to be people that don't offer information about things which you don't know will make your life better. Choosing to be people that don't speak with a slanderous tone or in a dishonest tone will make your life better. It will make all of our lives better if that's the way that we chose to communicate with other people. And there's one final thing that speaking with wisdom, that communicating in wisdom shows us in Proverbs chapter 10. It's the beginning of verse 11 and the beginning of verse 21, which we've already read. In the beginning of verse 11, it says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life." And then in verse 21, it begins with, "The lips of the righteous nourish many." To refer to the mouth of a righteous person as a fountain of life means that it doesn't only practically make the person communicating with wisdom better. It doesn't just mean that they're a person who has life or that it's just giving them life. But it's saying that it's also good for others to be around that wise person. The same is true when it says that the lips of the righteous nourish many. You see, and this is obvious, but we might not always think about this. Our communication always takes place with other people. And we have the opportunity, by communicating in wisdom, to improve the lives of other people. If we communicate the way that God designed us to communicate, it's not something that helps make our lives better. It's not just something that is important to do because we want to please God. That's important. I'm not saying that. But it's also something that we don't always think about this. It doesn't just involve us, but it actually has the ability to spread life and to nourish the people that we are around. By speaking out of knowledge instead of our own speculation, we can enrich the lives of others. By speaking honestly instead of lying, we honor other people. By speaking words that bring resolution to conflict, we nourish and give life to the people that are around us. Proverbs chapter 11 has just a few statements that we're going to read about the way we communicate with other people. So in verse 9, it says, "With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors, but through knowledge, the righteous escape." And then in verses 12 and 13, it says, "Whoever derides their neighbor has no sense, but the one who has understanding holds their tongue. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret." Speaking in wisdom improves the lives of others. One of the things that helped make this clear to me as I was doing some reading this past week is something that we find in a Jewish book called the Talmud. And the Talmud is a commentary. And so just like we have all kinds of English commentaries written by theologians for hundreds of years that help to illuminate and to teach us about passages of the Bible, in the Jewish tradition, there was this book, the Talmud, and basically what it was in the beginning was an oral tradition that was being passed on of rabbis that were explaining the law in that context to people. And so there'd be, you could pick any passage in Leviticus, any law that's there, or you know, like we've already cited, if we pick one of the Ten Commandments about not bearing false witness against your neighbor. So, there's a passage that says, a law that says, commandment, that we're not supposed to bear false witness against our neighbor. But then there are all of these questions that can develop over time, like, well, what does it really mean to bear false witness against my neighbor? How does that make sense, the way from when it was written then to what it means now to us? And so what the Jewish community had was the wisdom of rabbis that was passed on through generations, where Rabbi A would say, this is what that means in this context. And Rabbi B would have, you know, maybe a little bit of a different take. And so there'd be this list of the wisdom from all of the rabbis. And when you look at the Talmud, you see that over and over again, one of the things they come back to is this idea of something called Lashon Hara, which is this idea of disparaging speech or evil speech, or the idea of speaking unrighteously. And so this is something that appears multiple times in the law. It's something that these rabbis saw as very important. And one of them said this: it has been said that Lashon Hara, or that evil speech, kills three: the person who speaks it, the person who hears it, and the person about whom it is told. And it's for that reason that this idea of disparaging speech was something that in the Jewish law, you know, and in Jewish culture, was held up as being right on par with idolatry against God, adultery, being unfaithful to your spouse, the idea of murder. And even in that passage, what the rabbi was saying, that, you know, you have murder that kills one person, but you have evil speech that has the ability to kill three people, because it poisons the person who says it, the person who hears it, and it destroys the life of the person who it's spoken about. Communication matters. The way we speak matters, because it has the opportunity to bring life or to bring death. We know, and this was one of the reasons this was so important to rabbis, that communication is important. As we consider the way that God chose to speak the world into creation, it was in his words that he brought forth life and the created order as we know it. And then he created us in his image to act as his ambassadors in that creation. And in the same way, our words carry weight. We know that communication matters solely because of how big a part of our lives it is. Outside of our sleeping hours, there is little time in the day where we're not engaged in some kind of communication. And we know from lived experience that the way we speak with our children has an opportunity to bring life or to provoke anger. That the way we speak with our spouses has an opportunity to cultivate love and intimacy, or to stir up conflict. That the way we speak with friends or neighbors or coworkers or family members presents us with an opportunity to be people that speak with wisdom that is like a fountain of life, or with words that invite destruction. And even though I know this, even though all of us here knew this before we walked in today, that speaking in honesty is good, that speaking out of what we know is good, that being prudent and holding our tongues is good, we struggle as people to not fall into those foolish patterns of communication. And the book of James helps us to illuminate that when he writes in James chapter 3, beginning in verse 5, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. Our words carry with them the opportunity to corrupt our whole bodies and to set a fire that harms us and other people as well. And as we read here, James takes this a step further for believers. Again, he doesn't just say, okay, there's a wise way of speaking and a foolish way of speaking, but he says that if we think we can praise God in one moment and then speak foolishly or unkindly or disparagingly about our neighbor in the next, we're sadly mistaken, because we can't have both things coming out of the same mouth. And I appreciate reading James in light of these passages in Proverbs, because it acknowledges for us that this is more than just about a choice between a life of folly and a life of wisdom. That what's being spoken about here is the condition of our hearts. It brings to light the truth of Jesus' words in Luke chapter 6, verse 45, that say, a good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and an evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. These passages in James and Luke, they reveal to us that if we want to get a hold of the way that we speak, if we want to be people that speak knowledgeably, with wisdom, that speak in righteousness, that we need to be concerned first with being people that have wise and righteous hearts. We need first and foremost to be people that seek out the righteousness of God. And as we do that, it will change the way that we see others and the way that we communicate with others. In chapter 4 of James, which comes right after that lengthy passage about the taming of the tongue or the evil nature of the tongue, it talks about how we develop in our lives of wisdom. And it's how I want to close this morning. It says this in James 4, 7 and 8. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. I like the old version of James 4:8, where it says, draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Because it gives this idea that as we are pursuing him, he is pursuing us.